Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams, and a special treat today. You've probably heard his name associated with regular listener challenges during our fund drives. And now we have a chance to meet longtime Utah Public Radio friend Alberto Brizolara, who joins me from St. George, I presume, Alberto Brizolara?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, your home in the St. George area. Alberto Brizolara, you may or may not know, is a cardiologist in the St. George area, grew up in Brazil. We want to get to know him. Much else we'll talk about here. So, Dr. Brizolara, thank you so much for joining us.
You're very welcome, Tom. Very welcome.
You grew up in Brazil, I believe?
Yes, Tom. I moved to Brazil. I wasn't born in Brazil. I was born in Uruguay and the capital in 1964 when my parents were finishing college education. My father is an architect. My mother is a physician. And as soon as they finished, we moved to a city at the border with Brazil called Rivera, where my father was from. And we lived there not too long. I think when I was 4 years old, my parents moved to Paris to do more training. And my dad did a master and my mother did her fellowship. She's a physician. I spent a year there. They spent two. My mother's parents were living in Paris. So I returned to Uruguay with my sister and a few months later, they returned. And when I was 6 years old, my parents decided not to stay in Uruguay. They wanted to pursue more education. So we went to Madrid and spent 2 years in Madrid. But after that, they decided to return to South America, not to Uruguay. Uruguay was having a lot of political turmoil and is a small country. And so the southernmost state, the Brazilian southernmost state, university hired my father. And then I moved to Brazil and live until I was 8 years old and I live until I was 29 when I came to the state to do, I graduated as a physician to do my residency. But that's correct. My accent is Portuguese because this is where I spend mostly my life.
You spoke Spanish. Did you have to learn Portuguese when you...
I arrived in Brazil in December 72 and summer. So the school started in March and I learned Portuguese playing with the kids on the street. My dad introduced me to the neighborhood kids and I went there. And then I went to school in third grade, suffered a little bit for the first year, maybe a year and a half with the grammar. After 2 years, 2-3 years, I didn't have an accent in the language. It was my mother language as well. I always say that I didn't have two mother language, but a big mother language that mixture both. And many times I mixture them in school and the teachers will say, hey, this word doesn't make sense in Portuguese, but it's just that in my head it was all the same.
Probably a good way to learn, just talk to the kids on the street. That's a good way to start anyway.
After 2 weeks, I was able to communicate, answer back in some Portuguese, and the languages are very close, so it's not that I needed to learn much of the language. The grammar is about the same. It's just the intonation and some vocabulary that changes, but it's extremely easy. I suffered more when I came to the state and my English had been learned in school and private classes, and it's completely different when you come to a place that everybody speaks and that was, I came to the state in 1994, and I needed to a lot read lips or see the person moving so I could understand what they were saying. In the hostel, they will call me at night when I was on call, and on the phone, I couldn't understand. I will have to go to the floor, see the nurse talking to me so I could understand what it was necessary to do. But after 6 months and I work a lot in getting my English better. I watch a lot of TV. I read a lot of newspaper. Whatever I was recommended to do, I had a friend that recommended, why don't you read the Winnie the Pooh books that are for kids, and then you can get better cadence and vocabulary. And I did. And after, I will say, 6 months, I was able to medically communicate well. And after 2 years, I could communicate very well outside the hospital. A lot of the difficulties on communication is associated with the culture and what happened in the country and what happened in your local, and understand the culture, understand how people behave. And nowadays, you know, I still have a lot of problems when my grammar, and but communication is not a problem. I can listen to the radio and I understand everything.
Tell me about that cultural adjustment when you came to the United States. What were some of the biggest things you had to adjust?
Brazil is it's also a Western country, so a lot of the things are the same. You know, some of the daily etiquettes were completely different. You know, in the Brazilian culture, we are all very close to each other, and we, as a physician, even we don't have this difference too high and between patients and physicians. And we communicated smiling and moving hands. And that wasn't something that I noticed when I started in Miami. Fortunately, that it was at least when I was lost, I could use my Spanish. But you know, I have been so long that I'm kind of the problems faded away, and was difficult to understand when I was being socially correct or over. Been trying to be over educated, I mean polite. It's like when I came to Utah in 2003, it was the first year, everything was new. You know, St. George is a small town on Sundays. In Brazil, everybody's out on Sundays. And in Utah, in St. George, there were no kids on the street playing. It was that you go to the grocery store and there's no one. And but it doesn't take too long. You becomes part of your life. Is
I wondered. I wanted to run past you a couple of the, you know, the culture shock things that I had. I lived in Argentina for a couple of years, religious mission, and one thing was the physical closeness. Everybody wanted to give you an abrazo, a hug.
Yes,
Which I
it.
had not experienced in the U.S. In fact, Argentinians would tell me, "You North Americans are so cold. You don't want a hug." It's a different physical space.
It was the same for us. You there when you meet someone new, you give a hug, or you know, even a shaking hands is is cultural necessary. Your grandparents will tell you, you know, you have to shake people's hands when you meet them, and or if it's someone that is closer, you have to hug. It's a question of politeness. And yes, I noticed that when I came to the States. I felt like everyone had a shield, and try to break the shield, or try to behave without a shield wasn't acceptable. But it was difficult for me to put a shield, and you know, expressing your feelings was not something that you know, in our culture, we always expressing feelings. But after a little while, you realize that all of us are the same, and it's just that we express feelings in a different way. And so, what I thought it was expressing the feelings, the Americans will do it differently, and even the different cultures inside America will do it differently.
Another thing I noticed, I don't know if you had a similar experience after 2 years in Argentina. And, you know, speaking Spanish, hearing Spanish all the time, soft R, the language in the front of the mouth. I landed in Miami, back in Miami, and everybody sounded like a pirate. R is that hard, that hard U.S. R that really struck me because I hadn't heard it for 2 years. I don't know if you had any of those, just the sound
Well,
sometimes.
what struck me when I arrived in Miami is that even the Latinos that live in Miami have a completely different culture than ours. If we are close, they are way closer, they are loud. I always thought that they were mad with me, you know, that they were, the patients were mad, or you know, you go to the store and the Latino lady, the Cuban American lady is always is like rude. And until I had a colleague that she was a resident with me, and she said, no, my grandmother talks that way, and she loves all of us, you know. And so I realized that you know, we were different than the like the Cubans and the Puerto Ricans. But it was fun to get to know a different culture. You know, I saw the other side of Cuba, for example, that I never had heard in Brazil. And there was this idea that it was the kind of a beautiful land where you know the revolution had solved all the problems. And talking to people that had been part of that, had left the country, and that it wasn't as picturesque or beautiful as it was described or passed to us, that it was a lot was just advertised.
Did you encounter problems that I don't know if you still have problems in English that you encounter, because you know it's your, I guess, your third language. I don't know if you have
Oh, I
other
had an
languages.
English, you know, this was my suffering in the first 2 years, is that I couldn't express very well. I felt that I always had extremely self-awareness that I couldn't speak the language. I couldn't speak my own language very well, and I sounded sometimes as a dumb. And people in America don't want to wait for you to try to express a sentence, mostly in Miami and the big towns. And so it was, you know, I will start to explain something, and the other resident or someone else will cut me, and because they knew what I wanted to say. And that brought a lot of anxiety, and to me, as my self-esteem was being hit. It's difficult, you know, is you don't know the society, the language is completely different than my native language. And in Brazil, we do everything in Portuguese. It's not that like if I were from India that I will have gone to school in English. Nowadays, I do much better because I think in English, and I know the society, and I think with years and years, I've been in the States since 1994, so is 30 years, because I went back to Brazil for 2 years. It's actually the country that I had lived the longest. But of course, I learned the language when I was adult, so it's not the language that I have in the back of my mind that I can process really easily. But that was something very difficult. To be able to go to a birthday party and talk to people about common events took me forever to be able to be fluent in that.
It's quite the journey, yeah. But you've made it. You've made it. Well, let's head toward a break. And by the way, we're talking with Alberto Brusilar. He's a cardiologist in the St. George area, and more interestingly, to our UPR community, longtime friend and contributor to UPR. Really appreciate Dr. Brusilar and his wife, his family, for their longtime support. That's what I want to talk about for a couple minutes here. When did you first discover Utah Public Radio?
We moved in 2003 in July, early July, and I think 2 months later, I was listening all the time. I grew up listening to the radio, and I was listening always to like rock and roll radio and play the same and the same and didn't have any decent news. And my wife one day said, hey, there is this radio called UPR. I think comes from up north. We never had it. I think we had been to Salt Lake once or twice for 1 day each time or 2 days. And I started to listen to the radio, and I said, "Wow, this reminds me of my radios when I was a younger kid. There were not that much the music, but there was a lot of the information and a lot of the talk and the education that that you feel that you are part of the radio. Although we cannot answer to the radio while we're listening." But the radio brought a lot of information about the state, about the local things. In junction with NPR, we could have, I realized that I had international news and national news, and that the news was not skewed to sell me anything, or it created a sense of education, or it wasn't a news that I didn't feel that it was being shoveled at me, that I could process and say, well, yeah, this is, I think that this is this way, but or I maybe think there's another way. So I started to enjoy because I used to drive to the clinic and I will be listening all the time and driving back. And it was always interesting. I never had, oh, no, I don't like this, or the interviews. Even the weather, I remember around that time, the weather person was the Irish or Scottish
That's right,
gentleman.
yes.
And I said, oh, this is a cool accent. I can learn with this. And so I started to listen all the time. And I decided to start to support the radio. You know, every 6 months will come that week of the drive. And sometimes I used to get irritated. I said, I want the good program. I don't want to keep asking someone to give me money. But I think that after a few years, I realized, you know, if I pay for cable TV to have 200 channels and 195 channels are almost useless, why shouldn't I pay for something that gives me a lot of value in education? You know, if so, I remember I timidly called the radio one day and I said, you know, I want to donate a certain amount every month. And later on, when I enjoy even more the radio, I received my green card and I was in the path to citizenship. I said, well, now I'm going, something that was always very important in my family is to, you know, if you are part of the society, you have to be critical and you have to analyze. And I said, well, shortly I will start voting. And so I decided that since I had a decent income, that I could support the radio even more. You know, it's like people donate for many causes. I thought that donating to the radio was an excellent cause that was it was able to educate, or just the programs to me, they are the so good quality they can educate just listening, you know, about music, about the, you know, the issues with the farmers, the issues in Salt Lake, the issues everything. And one thing that I also had very clear is that the church is a big factor in this state, but I realized that the radio didn't have any position against or pro. You know, I didn't want anyone try to preach to me that the church was better, that the church was good. I just wanted to have a view, a general view of the positive things that every little part of this society in Utah had it. And the radio actually made me, you know, I probably love nowadays the state of Utah is in the bottom of my heart. Is something that I really is almost like my first country. Sociologically, we are the people, the person in the community. And my close community is St. George and Utah. So and I thrived here. So this is the place I love. And the radio brought that feeling as well.
Well, we appreciate your support, and we're urging you to add your support to Dr. Bruce Alara. He's just told you why he supports Utah Public Radio, has for many years, continues to do so. Here's the number, 800-826-1495, 800-826-1495. Call that number if you're listening to this in the morning. If you're listening to Access Utah in the evening, like I understand Dr. Bruce Alara does most of the time, then the better way to contact us is through the website, upr.org, upr.org. Click on the green donate button, upr.org. That's upr.org. We are needing to make up funds that we lost from the federal government. We got $200,000 per year every year. That's now gone. It won't come back. But we're making UPR sustainable for the future. And with Dr. Bruce Alara's contributions, with yours, maybe you add a little bit, we can certainly make this happen. UPR.org, UPR.org is the place to give. And thank you.
For years, we've been told that climate change will send massive waves of climate refugees across borders around the world. But researchers working in places already hit hard by floods, erosion, and rising seas say the real story is much more complicated. And that fact should change the way we prepare for a warming world. That's Undisciplined, today at 10:30 on UPR.
It's mandolin virtuoso, Rhonda Vincent. She's telling road tales of her family bluegrass band, getting to the Grand Ole Opry, then Montreal-born singer Alison Russell on her journey to healing through music, plus words from Nina Simone, Sister Rosetta Tharpe, Lucinda Williams, and Johnny Cash. On American Roots from PRX.
Tune in Saturday evening at 8 here on UPR.
You're listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Very pleased to have with us a longtime friend of Utah Public Radio, Alberto Bruce Alara. Alberto Bruce Alara is a cardiologist in the St. George area. He grew up in Uruguay and Brazil, spent some time in Spain as well, right?
Yes.
Now, since what, early 2000s, has been in St. George and in Utah. And he told us before the break, this is home now. This really feels like home. So we're glad to have Dr. Bruce Alara with us in Utah and as part of the UPR community. I know your family, going back, has a very interesting history. Your grandparents, tell me a bit about that.
My grandfather was descendant, Italian descendant, that eventually settled in Uruguay and became rancher. So my grandfather was a medium rancher in Uruguay. My grandmother was also the rancher and was the daughter of two school teachers. And my mother's grandfather was born in Spain at the first, 1901 or 1902, in a peasant family. Spain was very feudal, still very feudal, and had a very weak king. And he grew up in a peasant and with a lot of suffering, a lot of brothers and sisters. Eventually obtained some education through the Catholic Church and went to a bigger town, Alicante, at the coast with Spain, and went to college and studied philosophy, which probably was the natural way to go when you are educated by the Catholic Church. And we have to remember in Europe in the late 1800s with the Industrial Revolution and all of this, a lot of ideas, you know, labor ideas, the anarchist movement, the socialist movement were going on. And Spain being so poor and so feudal, my grandfather got in contact in college and then working. He taught and he, while studying in college, he was working a bakery and got in touch with all of these ideas and eventually became a politician and for the Socialist Party and won an election for the city and, let's put it, the county of Alicante, which is the coast with the Mediterranean. But the Spanish Civil War had started. It started a few years before World War II, and it was a very cruel and war. And my grandfather had two of his brothers assassinated because they were in the Republican side. You know, the Republicans is the one that wanted either the king to disappear and they will have a republic with a prime minister and a president, or the king will be a king, but and then there will be what is basically England right now. And Franco was fighting to become the dictator that eventually occurred. So at that time, my grandfather left Spain to Algeria because, you know, the Franco was winning the war. And he went to Uruguay, and in Uruguay is when he meets my grandmother, and my mom and my aunt were born. He spent a lot of time in Uruguay, and but he, in the 60s, late 60s, he returned to Europe to live in Paris because he couldn't enter Spain. He was in the exile. And that's the reason that we live in Paris, is because we live with them when my parents were doing more training there. And eventually he returned to Spain when Franco died and the king returned and the democracy returned and the parliament and all of this. He returned to Spain. And I had the chance of visiting him in 1978 in January. He was not doing much politics anymore. And it was interesting because he will have a lot of people visiting him. And there was a gentleman that I met that he marked me a lot. I was studying German, and this gentleman had been in a concentration camp. He fought the Nazis in France and was arrested and stayed in a concentration camp. And I wanted to speak German with him because I was learning a little bit in school. And he told me that he didn't want because he had been tortured, and German is a language that he learned while he was in the concentration camp. And at the same time, in the 70s, my parents also had a kind of left-wing ideas during college. When we live in Spain, later on, my father told me that he met a lot of Cuban immigrants that had gone left the revolution to go to Spain. And then he realized that all that revolutionary socialism, it wasn't too much different than the dictatorships that we had in South America, and Franco was about the same. And then is when he abandoned all those ideas and decided that he wanted just to raise a family. When I became a teenager in school, the Brazil had the militaries were ruling Brazil for 20 years. It started to become a democracy. You know, they were opening no more censorship and that. And then is when he started to educate me. My father started to educate me about politics and so on. And he clearly told me, say, you know, the both sides is all about power. So don't take your ideas too crazy and strictly, because both sides do the same. You know, I always think that we need to have a fair society, and you know, everybody has to have the chance to express their own ideas freely. And that was mostly the story of my grandfather, my mom's father. And the other side of the family, they were ranchers. I spent more time with them, actually. And it was, you know, like any rancher in Utah. They were hardworking people. You know, it was... they also had ideas of fairness, and they work hard. They give the idea that we needed to work hard and be fair and you know, be friendly, and whatever we do, try to make the society better. So that is my family.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Yeah, that's wonderful. Well, let's head toward another break. And I guess I'll ask you this about Utah Public Radio. By the way, we're talking with Alberto Brizolara. He's a cardiologist living in the St. George area. Fascinating history. You've heard some of that so far in the program. What are some of your favorite programs on UPR?
Oh, I think that every program is always very good. Your program is excellent. Everything. I always tell that you don't imagine how many times I stay in my car listening to the, or I said, oh, I'm so sad that I have to walk out the car. Now I take my iPods and I put it and I go listening, walking from the car to the hospital and stay listening whether they're talking. Is every program. There's so many, many things that I learned and that I got to know that is impossible. I will be unfair if I forget someone. You know, the programs that come out of Wild About Utah.
Yes, yeah.
You know, I grew up in big towns my whole life until I came to Utah. And now I love Utah. I love the outdoors. And the show that Wild About Utah is fantastic is the everything. I mean, I recommend people to listen and you will learn always. The show at night that comes from classical music, the interviews that come from Canada and the show that is comes through NPR, the local jazz that comes out of Salt Lake City, everything, the news that you guys bring from Utah is the other show that is both sides of the aisle.
Yes.
That comes out of made in Salt Lake is fantastic. Is what democracy should be. You know, is let one talk, let the other talk. You know, issues and themes and things that we don't hear every day . And then a lot of them are positive. It's showing how much the regular people in Utah, the regular ranchers or farmers or school teachers are what they're doing to try to, make our life better. And you guys are broadcasting this and even educating it's incredible. It's like being educated and in a fun way.
We are in our spring fund drive, as you know, and we would like you to, we're encouraging you to add your support to Dr. Brizolara's. He kicks in along with his wife every year, and we would like you to add your support to Dr. Brizolara's and to all of those who've given so far to help us to reach our goal and to help Utah Public Radio be sustainable and strong heading into the future. And you can make that very impactful phone call right now if you're listening in the morning, 800-826-1495, 800-826-1495. Just takes a couple of minutes. And perhaps consider increasing your donation just a bit. We've lost federal funding, as you know, to make UPR sustainable. We just spread that over our whole listenership, and we can definitely make UPR sustainable. You can go to upr.org as well. Click on the green donate button, upr.org. That's upr.org. And you probably listen, probably get the same value out of the programs that Alberto Brizolara was just talking about. We encourage you to sign a dollar figure to that, whatever fit into your budget, and then call 800-826-1495 or upr.org. I'm taking it as a personal favor as you give during this hour, during my program. 800-826-1495 or upr.org, and thank you.
Hi, I'm Neil Kirksall. As It Happens takes you inside the biggest and sometimes most bizarre stories around the world. And we do it in a pretty simple but powerful way, by phoning up the people closest to those stories. Hey, it's worked for us since 1968. Yes, that's way before I was born. From the serious to the seriously odd, As It Happens, radio that's all over the map.
As It Happens from the CBC, weeknights at 8 on Utah Public Radio.
Programming support here on Utah Public Radio comes from our members and Salt Lake City Weekly, a Utah news source since 1984 covering news, politics, music, and more in Salt Lake City and beyond. Available weekly at 1,800 locations across the Wasatch Front or online at cityweekly.com. utahpublicradio.net.
You're listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Very pleased to have a UPR friend, Alberto Brisolara, on the program. He's a cardiologist in the St. George area. Long-time listener to UPR, long-time contributor to UPR. You probably hear him and his wife during listener challenges during most drives. So we appreciate that. And we're getting to know Dr. Brisolara on the program today. Alberto Brisolara, your mother was a physician. Is that why you wanted to go into medicine?
You know, as when I was finishing high school, I didn't know what to do. I was a lot of in sports. I loved physics and mathematics. They were my best subjects. Hated language, which I wasn't very good. And I wanted to go in physical education or something, whether it was sports. And my parents... In Brazil, you take an entrance exam, and if you pass, you get into the school that you enrolled for. And my parents were ballistic. They said, no, you can't do that. You're not going to support your family. We were immigrants. If you need to, you know, you have to have a career that you, if you need to leave for any reason, you can work in another place. So I had a lot of pressure, and I decided to take the entrance exam to veterinary. You know, I love biology. And I entered veterinary and veterinary school to be a vet. And after 3 years doing research, and I realized it wasn't for me, and I decided to take the entrance exam to med school. And the reason that I hadn't thought about this before, my mother was very tough, very... You know, she was a very good mom, but she was she had grew up in a very strict family, and you know, study was everything, and you know, she will be happy only if the grades were really high, and she was calling the high school because I had some problems, it will be hell at home. So I didn't want to be a physician because she had been a physician and she had been so tough. And when I was in my 18, 19, my parents divorced. My mom lost a lot of the power that she had. And I also mature. And I mature. I didn't know all that behavior, like teenage behavior, went away. And I realized that, you know, I love medicine. I saw that all the time. The same way my sister ended up going to the architecture school. And I did a med school. People asked me, did you have a call to do medicine? Or, you know, I didn't do medicine. I don't know why I did medicine. I didn't have the idea that I wanted to, that it will be a profitable profession, or that it will be, I had a call to be, save the world. I love it, and I love to interact with people. And so I did med school. I did very well in med school. I met my wife in med school. And when I was getting to the end of med school, I said, you know, I have to travel. I have to go elsewhere. I have to, like my parents have done, my wife at that time, girlfriend, she had lived in the States for 5 years while she was little. Her father was doing his PhD in Alabama. And I told her, you know, when we graduate, would you go abroad with me? And it was super easy to come and do residency here. You needed to take 2 tests, the USMLE 1 and 2, and then the English test, and find a place as a resident. And I did. My English test is what I sweat the most because I thought I will have failed, but I passed. And then I was accepted at the University of Miami and came to do, I had done a year and a half of residency, and I came to do residency there. I spent 3 years there, and then I went to Houston, Texas, and I did my cardiology fellowship, and I spent 4 years there. So, Utah came. We had gone back to Brazil. When we finished our training, I wanted to go back, be a professor like my parents. I went back. I worked in the private university that had med school. But I wasn't very satisfied. My wife was, she was doing well, but several friends were calling, saying, hey, we need you here. There is a job here. And our son, godparents moved here. She was is a neurologist. They started to work here. And they told us, oh, St. George is underserved. They will switch your student visa to a working visa. And we moved here. And the first time I came to Utah, I've never been in the desert. I'm not for any tropical area, but my place is very green. It rains. They have cold winters. And I saw the desert in St. George, and I said, they should put all the nuclear power plants here. There is nothing. And so, but when we moved here after 1 year, the culture, I understood the culture. The desert was sounding very, very good. There was no humidity. And after 3 years, we received our green card. And we thought about going back to the Houston area or Texas. And we said, oh, Utah is so nice. Utah sounds like home. People are very friendly. St. George is beautiful. If you withstand the summer for 3 months, maybe 4 months, the rest is wonderful. And then we decided not to leave ever. You know, it's home. It is. When I go back to Brazil or to Uruguay, those places, yeah, I have the love for there, but I mostly home is here. This is home. This is what I want to retire and enjoy life and interact with everyone here. I wish we had a nice soccer team here.
Right, yes. Well, we're getting the World Cup in North America this summer. That'll be fun. Yeah. Who do you root for? Root for Brazil or Uruguay or Spain.
Oh, you know,
or U.S.
Spain, I have a respect for being the country that it started all the family, one side of the family. I root for Brazil, but I spent a lot of time playing soccer and being a teenager. And then I root for the state and Uruguay. Our team here has been suffer. The American male team is, at least in the last few years, is way more fun to cheer for, go for the women's team that is actually very, very good and they play beautifully. But in soccer, if they play, last year I went with my wife to see Brazil against Uruguay in Las Vegas. And I carry a Uruguayan flag and she carry a Brazilian flag and we sat together here for both.
Yeah, that's a good way to do it. Well, we have enjoyed this time with you, Dr. Brusilara. Just one more appeal to fellow listeners. Why should they give to UPR?
As I said before, Tom, it's a fantastic cause. It brings very fair information, local programs. The local programs is to know the news, the whatever is happening in our state and how people are trying to improve the state. You know, the problems that we have, the problems with the water, maybe the over-migration and the lack of resources and the way that we are addressing that. And have all this information is extremely important. And we spend money in so many things that are kind of useless. Why not to donate to UPR and to the fantastic cause, the fantastic programs? I can drive from Salt Lake here listening to all the programs in those 4-5 hours, and I never want to turn the radio off and say, oh, this is not what I want to listen. It's always something that it will, if the value for the money is fantastic, is incredible what you guys can do with limited resource and limited support. It's fantastic. It's, you know, when some other radio stations that have much more support and much more money, they give a show that is useless. So it's a good investment, is investing in get educated and get informed, fairly informed. And I don't know if it can, I can say more than that.
That says it all. Yeah. So we hope that you will add your support to Dr. Brusolara's at 800-826-1495, 800-826-1495, or go to upr.org, upr.org. Well, Dr. Brusolara, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you very much for inviting me.
And thanks, everybody, for listening to Access Utah.
Skywatcher Leo T here on Utah Public Radio. As the earth tilts towards spring and the days and nights are equal for a bit, we are hugely grateful to have public television and public radio. UPR, or Utah Public Radio, from Utah State University in Logan, is an amazing vital link, and it's a combination of talented radio journalists that come together to educate and inform our population about what is actually happening around us. Quoting from the website, "We believe the truth should be a public good, accessible to everyone, regardless of the ability to contribute. Our mission hasn't changed, but our funding has. With the loss of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, people who care about the democratic process and the ability to make a difference is crucial, and we can do it by contributing to this valuable resource from Tom Williams and Access Utah, which features interviews from poets and authors to writers and artists of all kind who are aware of the world around them, and it makes a listener feel good to know there are such folks out there. I am honored to have my short 3 to 5 minute program on Access Utah, featuring the sky during the day and the night, where we look regionally at stellar events that are, of course, connected to the rest the world, and deep space probes to the outer reaches and the Artemis II launch to the moon. We also look at other cultures and people's views of stars and constellations, what they see and interpret, and the sky lore that comes from these. We follow space exploration, as I said before, NASA, JPL, and all of its affiliated universities and labs like Utah State University Space Dynamics Lab that has been doing incredible work on deep space probes and continues to do so. So please keep pitching in so we can keep science, thought, democratic principles, kindness to each other, and great music and poetry from around the world, as well as respectful dialogue between people of differing views. Keep looking up, look around, and keep UPR on the air, and giving us a great view of the Earth. Skywatcher Leo T.
And along with Skywatcher Leo T and Dr. Alberto Brusolara, I'm Tom Williams with Debbie Andrew. We're happy to be with you on the UPR Spring Fun Drive.
We are. This is always a good experience to be able to talk to you about how funding for Utah Public Radio works and things you can do to help us out.
So, as Dr. Brusolara so eloquently told us during this hour, Leo T as well, we are listener supported. We're looking for your support, the community support. We pool our resources to make this all work. And so we're taking a moment just to explain how excellence in journalism is not an accident. It's an investment. You can invest in quality local journalism right now with your donation at upr.org, upr.org.
Yeah. In a world where social media friction, what is it? It creates chaos with our psyche sometimes. We can offer cool clarity of facts. We verify before we broadcast. We check our sources twice. We produce accuracy over speed. This discipline is expensive and it requires stable funding.
So, Leo T referenced this, with the permanent elimination of federal funding, Utah Public Radio needs a new level of commitment from those who value us most. And so your leadership level gift is needed more than ever.
A gift of $1,200 annually or $100 a month safeguards our mission against the uncertainty of this new funding landscape. You are providing the foundation that allows our new newsroom to remain ambitious and independent.
So a leadership level gift will also help Utah Public Radio maintain our high standards of fact-checking, in-depth reporting, the quality information you get on Access Utah behind the headlines, both sides of the aisle, the news magazines, UPR newsroom. You're providing the foundation that allows our newsroom to remain ambitious and independent. You're directly funding the expertise that makes this station a trusted resource.
And you can support that excellence by making your leadership investment today at upr.org or 800-826-1495.
Now, we know everyone can't give right now, and everyone can't give at this level that we're suggesting. But if you've been creeping a little closer, thank you so much for increasing your gifts over the years. If you're getting a little closer to that, we're inviting you to go up to that leadership level, $100 a month.
We are. And, you know, this morning we have the mug. We've been talking about the art mug. It's a beautiful piece, and you should go to upr.org and take a look at that.
It is very, very beautiful. Rehan Bakhtur is the winner of the contest this year. It's UPR Night and Day. So there's a night image and a day image. Very, very beautiful. That's the latest UPR art mug, and that for a pledge of a donation of $10 a month.
Right, and I heard her saying this morning, like, it's a coffee mug on a coffee mug. Like, the design is just so beautiful. And so I highly recommend making at least a $10 a month donation and acquiring that mug for your own collection.
Yeah. So now is the moment to take a stand for quality programming with your ongoing gift. You can go to upr.org, upr.org. Together, we can keep the power of public radio strong and vibrant for years to come. You know, it's interesting, early in the program, we heard Dr. Bruce Alara talk about how he first became a contributor to UPR. He said, you know, early on, when he was listening, the fund drives annoyed him. Why are you asking me for money? But then it clicked. The light bulb went off.
Right.
He said, hey, I get a lot out of this, so why shouldn't I give? Maybe the same for you. And if you can go to that leadership level, that producer's circle level, we'd love to have you on board. Love to have you on board at any amount.
Right. And that light bulb, have that light bulb moment and give us a call. 800-826-1495, or go to upr.org and make your donation now.
And thank you.